I hope you had a good day today, and thank you for being here tonight. God's given us another great opportunity to be together. Little did I know when I stepped off the plane steps onto the tarmac at Belay International Airport in the early spring of 2000 in the country of Ethiopia in East Africa, how much that step would change my life and my faith. I've had the wonderful opportunity to travel to Ethiopia 11 times, and I just got back about 1 month ago, making my last trip in the middle of January of this year. Ethiopia is in East Africa. Got it highlighted here on the map. It is a less economically developed country, to say the least, of about 75 million people. We Christians know Ethiopia best from Acts chapter 8, because Luke tells us about the Ethiopian nobleman or the Ethiopian eunuch. And so we know the gospel came to Ethiopia in the first century A.D. There are some legends about the Ethiopian nobleman, but there are no reliable, there's no reliable information that I'm aware of. So we do not know any more than that about him. But here is some here are some facts and figures about Ethiopia that might help you as we begin our consideration this evening. Ethiopia is about 1.5 times the size of the state of Texas. It has 77 million people. The life expectancy of an Ethiopian is about 49 years as compared to 76 or 77 in the United States. That's due to the high rate of infant mortality, and also the AIDS epidemic. The annual income, that is not a misprint, the annual income of an Ethiopian in the countryside is $140. And most people live off the land. 45% of the men and 25% of the women can read. Some things about the religion: about 10% of the population is Protestant, which would be what we would be classified as in the larger religious world. I want to tell you a little about our work in Ethiopia. I just want to run down some things that we do when we're there, and then I'm going to detail some of them a little later as I try to bring some lessons to us tonight. We do preaching and teaching in Addis Ababa. That's the capital of Ethiopia. It's a word that means pretty flower. The man beside me here is the translator. He is Biena. He actually lives in Fort Worth, Texas, and worships at Castleberry. He went to Ethiopia with me, back to Ethiopia with me a few years ago and served as a translator. We preach and teach in the countryside villages where many people come to listen. We use one and sometimes two translators, as you see in this picture, because sometimes we go to a place where they speak Hadinya or Kembata. We do not have somebody who can translate from English all the way to that language, so we have to use two translators. Zerahun is the Ethiopian on my left. We teach ladies. We teach children. And we teach countryside preachers. So those are some of the main objectives that we have to accomplish when we go there. A day never goes by that I do not have some thought of my brothers and sisters in Ethiopia, my many friends that I've made, and some reminder of how different life is in our country. The gospel we teach and preach is the same, but our countries and cultures are vastly different. And so, a little while ago, I took some time to reflect on my work in Ethiopia, and I asked Pat Underwood, who has gone with me 7 times, a lady from Castleberry Church. She goes to teach women and children, and I asked her to do some reflecting, and she shared some thoughts with me. If I have been able to teach and encourage Ethiopians some, and I believe I have over these 11 years that I've been going, I have in turn been taught and have been encouraged by them probably far more. So what I want to do tonight is not give you a report so much of the work that we do there, though that will be part of what I do. What I really want to do is to share with you some things that I have learned from working in Ethiopia. Some things that I think will help us all know God better and be more zealous and more interested in serving Him than ever before. So I want to tell you first that I've learned that the poor in this world may be the richest toward God. The second chapter of the book of James, James has a discussion about how to treat people impartially. Don't show favoritism. Don't show partiality. And part of what he argues there is that we need to look at people as God looks at people. And we need to have his attitude toward people. And in that place, in James chapter 2, verse 5, James says, "Did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he promised to those who love him?" This is right in line with what the Apostle Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 when he said, "Not many wise, not many mighty, not many noble are called." God is interested in rich people being his people, because he's interested in everybody being his people. He's interested in the mighty and the noble being his people, because he's interested in everybody being his people. But it's quite often that those people aren't interested in God. They have their own way. They have their own means. They are quite independent in many ways. And they just don't have time or energy for God. So James says God chooses the poor of this world because they listen, because they answer the call, because they know about need and dependence, and even about desperation. If the words "the poor of this world" describes anyone, surely it describes millions of people in Ethiopia. It is practically impossible for me to describe the depth of poverty that exists in the Ethiopian countryside. And it is a generational phenomenon. There are many children who grow up in the Ethiopian villages, and they will remain in those villages their entire lives, and they'll not complete their education, and they'll be poor as their parents are poor. It is a generational phenomenon from which only a few people are able to escape. Recent statistics indicate that in Ethiopia, 80% of the population, 80% of the population exists on a little less than $2 U.S. dollars per day. And as I have mentioned, the average annual income is about $140. And so a vast majority of the Ethiopians are poor. And most of the Christians in Ethiopia are poor. And yet I think it is significant. And I want to point out in a strong way that many of these people are rich in faith. I think we all know that materialism is a problem with the poor as well as the rich. It does not just plague people in America, it plagues people everywhere. But my observation and experience about Ethiopian believers is that though they are poor in this world, they are in many cases rich toward God. And I've thought about why that's the case, and my conclusion is that they live at the basic level of existence, uncolored and uncluttered by things. And I think that helps them be rich toward God. And we have some lessons to learn from them, especially when it comes to living uncluttered by things. Now, I know we don't live in Ethiopia. I'm not advocating that. I have to work on myself, especially right after I get back, that I don't play the Ethiopian card to my kids all the time, you know, when they leave food on their plates and things like that, because we don't live in Ethiopia. We live in America. But most of us are not poor by our economic standards. Nobody that I've ever run across in America is poor by the Ethiopian standards of poverty. But most of us are not poor by any standard. And so that reminds us of something. And we need a healthy reminder. Now, I want to do that right now. We need a healthy reminder that the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. We need to be honest about that. And we need to be careful about it. It's the truth from God. The love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. We need to be reminded that we came into this world with nothing and we'll go out with nothing. And we need to listen to those sobering words about the man who had barns, but he tore them down to be a bigger barns. And the Lord said to him, tonight your soul will be required of you, because there's going to be a day, and we do not know when. It may be sooner instead of later that the Lord will say the same thing to all of us. Today your soul will be required of you. We can be, and so many people in our country are, consumed by what money can buy that we have forgotten what money cannot buy. There are some things that money can't buy. There are some things in our family life, in our spiritual lives, in our churches, that you can't buy with money. And we must never forget it. Paul's instructions to the rich, and I would turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6, because I think this is a good time for us to read it again. His instructions to the rich are needed and just as relevant as ever. 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, instruct those who are rich in this world not to be conceited or fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life. Indeed, I just want to ask us, when was the last time that we have been seriously rich toward God? When is the last time that we have been seriously generous with our things? That's what he calls on people who are rich to do. Well, I've learned that the gospel is powerful and does change people. I want to just show you some few pictures about the poverty that exists. This is my daughter, Kelsey. She's going to be with us Friday night. This is a market in Ethiopia. It's what I call the countryside Walmart. They have them on Wednesdays and Fridays. And they set all that up, and people come from their villages, and they bargain and buy. It's all taken down, and they come back again in a couple of days. Typical countryside life. This is a woman who is carrying some sort of straw on her back to go to the market. Those are some young fellows up there who are taking some grain to market. People walk in Ethiopia or ride their mule. This is housing in a countryside town. You can see the mud and grass wall over the wooden frame. The frame's usually made of eucalyptus. Those are some pieces of sheet metal that form the roofs in the cities of the countryside. Grass, as you'll see in a moment. This is a countryside hut. Most people live in this kind of structure in the countryside. It has a dirt floor. It's about 18 or 20 feet across, and has a grass roof. You have to know how to do that. Not anybody can make the roof or it will leak. You have to know the proper technique to do it. Ladies, this is the kitchen inside the hut, what we would call a campfire. So that just shows you the depth of poverty that exists in Ethiopia. But we need to think about being rich toward God and give special attention to things that money can't buy. Well, another thing I've learned is that the gospel is powerful and does change people. What I want to do now is just kind of lead you through a day in the countryside that we spend as we're preaching and teaching. We go to a city in the countryside that has a tourist hotel. That means it has a shower of sorts and electricity some of the time. And we stay there at night. In this case, we stay in Hosanna many times at the Hemi International Hotel that cost an American $15 a night. And then in the daytime, we take day trips. We go to various villages. We may go 1 hour, 2 hours, 2.5 hours to different villages around in the area, depending upon how close they are and how bad the roads are. Sometimes we go about 20 miles, and it may take almost 2 hours to travel that because the roads are so bad. Here's a day's work in the countryside village. This is a typical road that we will travel. Use a four-wheel drive vehicle and a driver. It comes with a driver. Stays with us the whole time. We go to a place where it's been announced that we'll be, and there's an incredible thing that happens. We go, and we have a certain day and time that we'll be there, and they don't have email, they don't have telephones, they don't have television, but everybody knows. You know, they make announcements far in advance. They pass the word by word of mouth, and people know. And all the time I've been there, it's been so organized, people are aware of when we're going to be there. So people are gathering, and they greet us, and we have an opening assembly in which I will bring a sermon to everybody. And then we divide into classes, and I'll take the men, Pat Underwood will take the women, and if we have somebody to teach children, sometimes we do, then we'll divide the children out. Otherwise, they'll go with the women for the most part. And then we'll spend a couple of hours teaching. In this case, the women stayed inside the meeting place, and the men just went out under a tree, and I taught. And this is Pat Underwood teaching the ladies. And then we come back together for a closing assembly. And this is a young man who's directing the assembly. He's directing the singing. They don't have books, and they sing in unison. And what he's doing is asking for suggestions. He'll ask anybody to suggest a song, and maybe there'll be five suggestions, and he'll choose which one they will sing. And then here I am preaching. I usually don't sit down to preach in Ethiopia, but that year, can't remember, that was about 4 years ago, I had broken my ankle. And so I was scheduled to go, had my plane flight, so I went. So they made a stool for me so I could sit while I preach. That is Ethiopia PowerPoint there. I was preaching a lesson about the Lord's Supper, that it's a backward look, inward look, upward look, and forward look. And so I took some pictures along to help illustrate that. And then we say our goodbyes. So we're there from about 10 in the morning till 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So that's a typical day's work in the countryside. And they're very affectionate people and loving people. And they will greet you by touching your face on one side and then on the other side and then on the other side. So 3 times you touch faces in Ethiopia. And I've repeated that routine so many times in the Ethiopian countryside that we go to villages and we preach and teach that way. Well, somebody asked me recently about preaching in America, and they said, how do you keep preaching and preach your heart out, extend the invitation, and often get no visible response? How do you keep doing that day in and day out, week in and week out? Well, I thought about that, and I can respond in 2 ways. First, preaching the gospel is our business, and the results are God's business. He said in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 that we're to plant and water and that God gives the increase. So we need to get the word out there in an informative, interesting, persuasive way. But the results are God's business. And then another thing occurs to me, and maybe the more significant thing, is that I finally learn that I can't change people. I can only change myself. And that's true of every person. I can't make a person a Christian. It is a personal, individual decision that a person has to make. We can give information and motivation, but finally each person must decide what he or she is going to do about Jesus. I want everybody to know Jesus and love him and follow him and obey him, but I can't make that decision for people. I'm going to say as much as I can to try to persuade people, But then it is their decision. But another thing I thought of is that we are accustomed to a certain type of invitation and a certain type of response in our culture, in our country. But that is not the only way that it can be done. The only response to the gospel is not a visible response, what I call a come down the aisle, be baptized response. There are a lot of other responses to the gospel that need to be made. And as a matter of fact, the Ethiopians do not offer an invitation as we do. And so when we go there, we don't offer an invitation. But in the 11 years that I have been going and other men from America have been going, over 4,000 people have been baptized in Ethiopia. So people are responding to the gospel. And almost 150 new churches have been planted. And I'm happy to tell you that I've never baptized an Ethiopian and I've never seen an Ethiopian baptized. The Ethiopian preachers do that. Here's what we do when we go. I think we do two or three things. Number one, we encourage people. They know we've come a long way. Our families are behind. It's 8,300 miles to Ethiopia. They know the local church, Castleberry Church, supports me to go there. And so they're encouraged by that. They're lifted up. Second thing we do is we attract attention. People will come out. People who are not New Testament Christians. They want to come and see what and hear what a white man from America has to say. And so they'll come out. And then the third thing we do is that we help and encourage and instruct Ethiopian preachers. And so they follow up. They make prospects. And they follow up with teaching and classes and preaching. And so they've done all the baptizing. And I think that is good and healthy and the way it ought to be. I guess I should back up and clarify one thing. I have baptized three Ethiopians, but they're Biennas children, the man I told you about who's moved to Fort Worth, and I baptized them at the Castleberry building in Fort Worth and not in Ethiopia. Well, several people share money with me. When I go to Ethiopia, I'm supported by Castleberry Church, but several people share money with me. And I want to tell you one way that I use that money that I think is wonderful, and that is I leave it for Ethiopian preachers to take what we now call gospel trips. And here's the way that works. 10, 12, 15, maybe 20 men will set aside 14 to 20 days, and they will go to villages. They'll usually go two or three together. And they'll spend several days in that village, and they'll preach and teach. And they'll encourage. They'll teach children. They'll teach women. And I have here a recent report that was sent to me. And the summary of it is that 27 preachers traveled to 111 places, and they taught 11,207 people. And 51 people were baptized. That was the gospel trip that people in America helped to support. Recently, Demica, who was one of the men in the previous picture who was translating for me, a very powerful, energetic, enthusiastic preacher, he went to a new place west of Addis Ababa called Jima, and he spent a few weeks there. And during his work there, 70 people were baptized. I don't know about any of you, but I haven't preached in the United States recently and had 70 people baptized in a short period of time. But it's happening in Ethiopia. So what's the lesson? Well, the lesson is that we must keep preaching and teaching the gospel at home and abroad. We must find opportunities and we must create opportunities to get the word out. And we must persistently teach everybody. Men, women, and children. In the last 7 years, we've given a special attention to preaching, teaching women and children in Ethiopia. Nobody had done that before. And let me tell you what's happened as a result of that. The Ethiopians tell us that they see a difference in their homes, in their marriages. They see a difference in the confidence that the Ethiopian ladies have to teach children. The preachers were doing it all before and ladies weren't doing it any. And now they have confidence because of Pat's work with them. And so they're able to see a noticeable impact that it makes in their homes. In all the churches that are in Ethiopia, none of them yet has elders. But we're working on that. And one way we have to do that is to teach them about family life, about marriage, and about raising their children in the Lord. I'm confident that that will be forthcoming in time. Here's Jordan Holland. He's a member at Castleberry. He and his wife went with me about 3 years ago, I think. They had just gotten married, and I came back and gave a report, and they said, oh, we just love to do that before we have children. And I told them, if you save your money and you arrange your schedules, I'll take you. And so they did. And so Jordan went and taught men with me, and Jamie taught ladies. The first time I went to Ethiopia, these ladies were in a Bible class that I was teaching one afternoon, and they asked, will you please bring women from America to teach us? And in 2003, I was able to do that. Pat Underwood went, and she's been going ever since. In fact, I tell people that I don't think I'm welcome in Ethiopia anymore unless I bring Pat with me. They call her Agape. That's her nickname in the Ethiopian countryside. And one of the reasons they do that is because when she finishes teaching the women, she has what I call her hugging and kissing session. And that is, she goes around the room and she hugs every woman in the room. And so I tell her, if you have 100 or less, you can do that. If it's over 100, we don't have enough time to do that. It takes a long time. We patiently wait for her hugging and kissing session. This is Jamie, Jordan's wife, and she was teaching children. She was teaching them about Naaman and having leprosy. That's why they have yellow dots on them. The interesting thing is that she put that on them to teach the story about leprosy, but they didn't want to take them off. They wanted to keep them. So they took them off to learn the lesson, and then they put them back on. So we need to keep preaching and teaching the gospel. Where do elders come from? Think about that. Well, they come from young men who mature in the faith, who learn to lead their families, who develop good marriage, raise their children in the Lord. Where do deacons come from? Well, they come from men who are immature, who grow, who learn. Where do the wives of deacons and elders come from? Where do strong families and strong churches come from? Here's where they come from. They come from people who learned and decided and changed and failed and recovered and learned and decided and changed. There's no miracle and there's no magic in all this. It's the same for all people at all places. And so we need to keep creating opportunities, looking for opportunities and using opportunities to preach and teach the gospel. Parents, I want to encourage you to be diligent about teaching your children. We have such a short window of opportunity. Don't let it pass you by and have regrets about not teaching your children about God. Older men and older women need to teach younger men and younger women. We need to keep planting and watering so the gospel will have its impact in our lives and the lives of other people. This may be the hardest lesson that I'm going to talk about tonight. I've got it right here in the middle of the sermon. I've learned that we complain too much. So I want to teach a little lesson about that. Here are some scenes from Ethiopia that will help you get a feel for everyday life. Here are the Ethiopian roads in the countryside. Sometimes we go where there practically is no road, and the brethren have made a road for the vehicle to drive in. Always cows, goats, sheep, chickens on the road, people. Sometimes it rains. And here is a bus. This is a public transportation in the countryside. And that day it happened to be raining, and so everybody was getting wet. You just pile your stuff up on there and jump up on there, and away you go. We do not ride public transportation in the countryside. I took this series of shots. This was in the city, as a matter of fact. This woman brought this large yellow plastic container to a place where there must have been a well, because she let it down and she filled it with water. She obviously didn't have any running water to her home, and so she hoisted it on her back. And then she took a shawl that she had and she started wrapping it around that jug and herself. And so she is on her way home. She is taking water for her family. This is countryside housing. They're fixing the roof there, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that or not. It's traditional in the countryside that at night they bring their animals inside the house. They have stables that are built around the outer walls. And there's their kitchen. Here's some teenage girls who are carrying cabbage to the market. This is laundry day. There is a little creek right behind there that you can't see in that picture. But it's right back there. They've washed and then they're laying them out for drying. Here's our getting to the meeting place. And this is a meeting place in the countryside. And here are some pews. We were going to have more people that day than they usually have, so they took stalks of false banana trees and they laid them parallel and lashed them together. And so that was the pews for the day. This is a restroom right outside the meeting place. And here is a lady who's preparing bread for the Lord's Supper. That's bread inside the false banana leaf that's wrapped around it so it won't be so dry. And that's the Lord's Day Assembly in Acha a couple of years ago. Every time I take somebody to Ethiopia, I show them pictures, of course, and I tell them what they're going to see. But it's been quite interesting to watch their faces and hear their reactions the first time we travel into an Ethiopian countryside village. For all the photographs I've shown them and all the things that I've told them, it's one of those you can't believe it until you see it with your own eyes situation. It's nearly impossible to believe. I just shake my head sometimes that we live on the same planet as people who live in Ethiopia, even in the city, but especially in the countryside. The poverty is deep and long-standing, and it's a way of life that none of us will completely understand. But I know we don't live in Ethiopia. We live in America. We live in the 21st century. We live in houses that are made of wood and stone and glass, concrete and bricks. We have clothes and cars and food and things. And I recognize that all that's not going to change. I understand that. And the point is not that we need to get rid of all of the things that we have and live in poverty. That is not the point. In fact, there are a lot of things that are going on in Ethiopia that are wonderful, that are only made possible by money that American people are able to contribute. So the point is not that we need to live in poverty. The point is this, that in light of what we have, I'll tell you, we complain too much. Philippians chapter 2, verse 14, Paul says, "Do all things without grumbling and disputing." And I hope this will cause you to take another look at what you have and be thankful for it. And remind us, we just need to remind ourselves not to complain about things we don't have, but to be thankful for all that we have. If we find ourselves grumbling and complaining, we need to remember what Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, verse 48, "To whom much is given, much is required." And we need to take that seriously. I want to tell you this neat thing that I've learned in Ethiopia, and that is I've learned that the fundamental needs of people are the same wherever you go. Pat Underwood, I think, helped me see this more than anybody. What do people need? We need affection. We need love. We need friendship. We need relationships. We need compassion. We need attention, consideration, respect, forgiveness. It's easy. And I think it is especially easy in our culture for us to slide into selfishness. That we just get so caught up in what I want, how I feel, what I need, that we forget about other people. When our children were growing up, much younger than they are now, I had this little routine that I did in my home. It was to teach a lesson about self-centeredness. I would get up on a chair. I just did that for attention, you know. I would get up on a chair and I would say, wait a minute. Thomas forgot that he's not the only person who lives in this house. Or wait. Andrew forgot he's not the only person in the world. You know, I've been tempted at times in the church to stand on a chair in the church building and say, wait a minute, brother so-and-so forgot he's not the only member of this church. I haven't done that yet, but I've been tempted to. Other people have needs. Other people have feelings. Paul said in Philippians chapter 2, verse 3, regard one another as more important than yourself. It's easy, especially in our country, to slide into selfishness. I read a little story about Ethel. Ethel, the story said, lived in her own little world. She was surrounded on all sides by Ethel. And we can do that. We must take time for people. I appreciate people, this congregation. I've seen you interact with each other, staying after services. I want to recognize and commend that. I think that's wonderful. The Bible says we must be kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving. Ephesians 4, verse 32. Jesus said to those who were the sheep, when you did it to these brothers of mine, even the least of them, when you fed them and visited them and cared for them, when you did it to the least of them, you did it to me. Last thing I want to share with you tonight. I've learned that obeying and serving God are mostly matters of decision, not circumstances. These are the needs that people have. Affection. These are Ethiopian greetings. So I've learned that obeying God is a matter of choice, not circumstances. Let me tell you what happens. The time and place is publicized where we're going to be, and we travel on roads like this to get there. But we travel in a four-wheel drive vehicle with a driver. But the Ethiopians come, and some of them walk 6 and 8 hours because they want to be there. They've learned that the Americans are coming. Is there an opportunity to see us and visit with us and be encouraged by our time together? And the story is the same almost everywhere I go. They travel, and by traveling I mean they walk on these roads. And it is nothing unusual for them to walk that long. And then they sit and listen to our teaching. And then they say, will you stay longer and you teach more? This is at Molito. That particular day we had 800 people who came and sat on the ground, many of them did, to hear our teaching. So I say all that to say, what about our situation? Well, we have indoor plumbing, air-conditioned homes, air-conditioned and heated cars, climate-controlled church buildings, padded pews. And people sometimes don't come to worship God with the saints. Sometimes any little inconvenience, any slight difficulty or discomfort, and I just can't make it. And then we have gospel meetings, and sometimes we fly in preachers to preach for a gospel meeting, and we make announcements months in advance. We have fantastic facilities, and some people don't come. Forgive me, but something is wrong with that scene. And I know what it is. It's not circumstances. It's decision. People have the resources and the resourcefulness and the resilience to do whatever they want to do. You know, that's a wonderful thing about being in America. For the most part, you can do whatever you want to do. So we have to decide. Obeying God and serving Him are matters of decision. You know, the reason some people are humble and obedient and faithful as the day is long? They decide to be. You know why some people are always involved? Always present when the doors are open? It's not because they have less headaches, less relatives visiting, less money problems than other people. It's because they have decided. Do you know why some people are always ready to volunteer to teach Bible classes, to have young people's devotionals, to practice hospitality? It's not circumstances. It's decision. I love this little story about a lady of a local congregation who had to get along with two canes everywhere she went. She was just crippled as she could be. But she was there for every service. Ladies' Bible class, Wednesday night, she was always there. And she was such an inspiration to so many people. And one day the young ladies wanted to take her out for lunch after a ladies' Bible class, and they did that. And they asked her how she was able to do that. And she said, you know, it's really quite easy. My heart goes first, and my feet just follow. And that's the way it is with all of us. I was in a gospel meeting once, and somebody prayed this. It's the only time I've ever heard it prayed, but I think it's a wonderful prayer. Lord, help us to line up our want-tos with our need-tos. Because we want so many things. In that way, we can assure that what we need and what we want are the really important, really valuable, really priceless things in life. Well, I want to ask you tonight, have you decided to follow God and go to heaven? We get lazy and we make excuses. We blame other people. We blame a lot of things on our circumstances. But that really doesn't lie at the crux and the heart of what's going on in us. We need to face the person in the mirror and face the raw fact that it's not circumstances. It's decision. There are some circumstances we can't change. I understand that. There are some things that we can't do if we wanted to. But for the most part, faith and faithfulness depends on choices, not circumstances. I want to tell you tonight that I praise God. I praise God that so much progress for the gospel is being done in Ethiopia. And I hope you are not just made to feel guilty tonight. That's not what I was trying to do. I want you to be moved and I want you to be motivated. And I want you to see some things about yourself and about this church and about other people that maybe we don't see because we just get caught up in the circumstances of life and we don't realize what's going on in our hearts. Well, thank you for listening tonight. If you'll turn the lights on, please. If you'll get your songbook out and turn to the number that's been selected, I want to go back to that Ethiopian eunuch riding in his chariot, learning about Jesus. And he saw some water and he said, what prevents me from being baptized? And I want to ask you tonight if you need to ask that question to yourself. Thousands of Ethiopians have learned the gospel and obeyed it with simple love and faith. And the gospel is the same in Australia, in Ethiopia, in your city, and in mine. Jesus died for us. We can live in Him. Joined with Him in baptism. Raised to walk in newness of life. Knowing that, do you need to say, what prevents me from being baptized? What prevents me from being right with God? What prevents me from being a zealous, dedicated Christian as I have the opportunity to be? And if we can help you do that right now, while it's on your mind and your heart, if you'll come to the front, someone will help you to be what you can be for God and in Jesus Christ. That's His invitation, and that's our encouragement as we stand and sing together this evening.